ज्ञानातिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वापदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन्वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणारघुनाथं वितं तं सजीवां साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादं सहगणाललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्ध दीनबन्ध जगत्पदे गोपेश गोपिका कान्ता राधकान्ता नमस्तु ते। तप्तकाञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
This morning you're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, Text 56. Chapter is entitled Chanting the Song Sung by Lord Shiva.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yatra Nirvishtam Aranam. Yatra Nirvishtam Aranam. Yatra Nirvishtam Aranam. Kritanto Nabhimanyate. Kritanto Nabhimanyate. Vishvam Vidvamshayan Virya. Vishvam Vidvamshayan Virya. Shaurya Visphurjita Bhruva. Shaurya Visphurjita Bhruva. Yatra Nirvishta Maranam. Kritanto Nabhimanyate. Vishvam Vidvamshayan Virya. Shaurya Visphurjita Bhruva. Yatra Nirvishta Maranam. Kritanto Nabhimanyate. Vishvam Vidvamshayan Virya. Shaurya Visphurjita Bhruva. Yatra Nirvishta Maranam. Kritanto Nabhimanyate. Vishvam Vidvamshayan Virya. Shaurya Visphurjita Bhruva. Yatra Nirvishta Maranam. Kritanto Nabhimanyate. Vishvam Vidvamshayan Virya. Shaurya Visphurjita Bhruva. Yatra Nirvishta Maranam. nirvishtamaranam kritanto nabhimanyate vishvam vidvam shayan viryam shaurya viskurchita bhruva yatra nirvishtamaranam kritanto nabhimanyate Vishvam vidvam shayan virya Sharya viskurchita bhruva Yatra nirvishta maranam Kritanto nabhimanyate Vishvam vidvam shayan virya Sharya viskurchita bhruva
Yatra, wherein nirvishtamaranam, a completely surrendered soul, krita antaha, invincible time, na abhimanyate, does not go to attack, vishvam, the entire universe, Vidvam Shayan, by vanquishing. Virya, prowess. Shaurya, influence. Vispurjita, simply by expansion. Bhruva, of the eyebrows. Translation. Simply by expansion of his eyebrows, invincible time, personified, can immediately vanquish the entire universe. However, formidable time does not approach the devotee who has taken complete shelter at your lotus feet. Please repeat. Simply by expansion of his eyebrows, invincible time personified, can immediately vanquish the entire universe. However, formidable time does not approach the devotee who has taken complete shelter at your lotus feet. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita 10.34, it is said that the Lord in the shape and the form of death destroys all a person's possessions. Mrityu sarvaharaschaham, I am all devouring death. The Lord in the shape of death takes away everything that is created by the conditioned soul. Everything in this material world is subject to perish in due course of time. However, all the strength of time cannot hamper the activities of a devotee, for a devotee takes complete shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. For this reason only is a devotee free from formidable time. All the activities of the karmis and jnanis, which have no touch of devotional service, are spoiled in due course of time. The material success of the karmis is destined to be destroyed. Similarly, the impersonal realization attained by the jnanis is also destroyed in the course of time. Aruya krishnena param padam tata padantyado nadrita yushmadankhaya. To say nothing of the karmis, the jnanis undergo severe austerities to attain the impersonal brahmajyoti. But because they do not find the lotus feet of the Lord, they fall down again into this material existence. Unless one is fully situated in unalloyed devotional service, there is no guarantee of liberation, even if one is elevated to the heavenly planets or to the impersonal Brahman effulgence. A devotee's achievement, however, is never lost by the influence of time. Even if a devotee cannot completely execute devotional service, in his next life he begins from the point where he left off. Such an opportunity is not given to the karmis and jnanis, whose achievements are destroyed. The bhakta's achievement is never destroyed, for it goes on perpetually, be it complete or incomplete. This is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. Shuchinam shrimatam gehe yoga prashto bhijayate. If one is unable to complete the process of bhakti yoga, he is given a chance in his next life to take birth in a pure family of devotees, or in a rich family. In such families, a person can have a good opportunity to further progress in devotional service. When Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, was instructing his messengers, his assistants, he told them not to approach the devotees. The devotees should be offered respect, he said, but do not go near them. Thus the devotees of the Lord are not under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he controls the death of every living entity. Yet he has nothing to do with the devotees. Simply by blinking his eyes, time personified can destroy the entire cosmic manifestation. But he has nothing to do with the devotee. In other words, devotional service which is rendered by the devotee in this lifetime can never be destroyed by time. Such spiritual assets remain unchanged, being beyond the influence of time. This shloka appears in the chapter chanting the song by Lord Shiva. So when I was preparing for the verse today, I was realizing that many times when we are focused on the daily shloka, we sometimes forget the overall broader picture of the chapter or the canto. And it's very easy to do that because we're only dealing with one verse at a day, per day, maximum two or three verses sometimes if there's no purport. So just to give a little background overview of what is actually happening in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the fourth canto, chanting the sung by Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is speaking to the Prachetas. And does anyone know who the Prachetas' father is? Any volunteer? Who are the Prachetas' father? Prachana Bharishad. Yes. I have to admit that when I've been attending class almost every day, and I thought the Prachetas' father was Daksha. I don't know, maybe someone else had this similar misunderstanding. When I was reviewing this chapter, and I realized that there are sons of Prachana Bharishad. And of course, Prachana Bharishad is very famous in the next few chapters, because Narad Muni is going to come and instruct him. Here we see Lord Shiva instructing the Prachetas. Now, Maharaj Prachana Bharishad has told the Prachetas, now you should go and perform austerities before taking up responsibility, before getting married and starting a family, before you take over the kingdom also. And we see in Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a very common practice. Before one enters Grihastha Ashram, the personalities in Srimad Bhagavatam, many different places, they go to the forest to perform austerities to please the Lord. So the Prachetas are following their father's instructions very obediently. There are 10 sons, 10 Prachetas. And they've gone to the forest. Actually, they're going to the ocean to practice tapasya. So it's very significant. Sometimes in our lives, when one has to make the change from Brahmacharya Ashram to Grihastha Ashram, it's actually a time of kind of depression or despondency and uncertainty. But we see with examples from Srimad Bhagavatam, actually it's a time when one should focus very seriously on one's spiritual practices and try to gain inspiration from devotional service before taking up a more responsible position. So the Prachetas, following the father's instructions, are going to perform austerities, and by good fortune they have met Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva emerged out of the lake which the Prachetas were passing by, and immediately when they had darshan of Lord Shiva, they were overwhelmed with gratitude, and immediately Lord Shiva also was very pleased to see them. So these are 10 brothers, and they're all of the same nature, all of the same mind. Sometimes we see in families when there are many siblings, there's conflict. Some brothers don't get on with the other sisters, or the brothers-in-law don't get on with and people don't talk to each other, they have feuds. It's a very common thing in the material world. But these 10 brothers, they're totally united in purpose. And they're all doing the same thing, following the instructions of their father very obediently. So Lord Shiva is very pleased to see them, and he offers them these instructions in the form of prayers. Yesterday, Parishad Prabhu also enlightened us that these prayers are not simply composed by Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, of course, he's an acharya, sampradaya acharya. He's perfectly competent to compose his own prayers to the Lord. But these prayers he also references. They're not simply his own creation, but these prayers are given by Lord Brahma in text 72. These prayers were spoken to us by Lord Brahma, the master of all creators. The creators headed by Bhrigu were instructed in these prayers because they wanted to create. And the Prajapatis then chanted the prayers that they had heard from Lord Brahma. And Lord Shiva himself is one of the Prajapatis. according to this shloka. So this is also another interesting point, is that here are the prachetas. They are going to perform tapasya before they enter Grihastha Ashram. And Lord Shiva is giving them prayers, which he got from Lord Brahma, before they were to expand and create progeny. So there's a very close parallel. Both had the same purpose. The Prajapatis had to create offspring, and Prachetas have also been ordered to create offspring. And these prayers are common in both cases. So later on we'll see the Prachetas will chant these prayers very seriously, that they've heard by the mercy of Lord Shiva. And further on they'll actually get darshan of Lord Vishnu himself. And when Lord Vishnu appears before them, being very pleased by their prayers and by their tapasya, then one of the shlokas Lord Vishnu speaks to them, he comments that he's very pleased to see their unity, the 10 brothers' unity and cooperation among them. Actually, this is quite a famous shloka coming up in a few chapters, and actually Radhanath Maharaj spoke on this verse during the ILS in the mood of cooperation and helping each other. So Lord Vishnu noted that these 10 brothers are very praiseworthy because of this quality. So later on, the tapasya goes on for 10,000 years and Lord Vishnu appears. Now in the meantime, we have their father, Maharaj Prachandabhadishad. And he's still running the kingdom while his sons are doing the tapasya. So he's busy doing karmakanda yagyas, offering sacrifices, animal slaughter even. And Narad Muni takes compassion upon him. His sons are very busy in engaged in pure devotional service, hearing from Lord Shiva, having darshan of Lord Vishnu, you know, very, very praiseworthy, very high devotional activities. But somehow their father is stuck at home and he's become engrossed in karmakanda. So we see Narad Muni, he'll appear in the next few chapters and he'll instruct, taking compassion upon Maharaj Prachandabhadishad, he'll instruct him in pure devotional service through the very interesting and kind of an enigmatic story of King Puranjana, the allegorical story of King Puranjana. So Maharaj Muni will instruct Maharaj Prachandabhadishad in the story of a king, which is actually himself, it's actually the story of the living entity. And it's a very complicated story, goes on for a couple of chapters, how the king, who's actually the living entity, he goes to hunt and his wife becomes angry, the wife is compared to the intelligence and the city of 9 gates, which is the body, and it goes on and on. And Maharaj Prachandabhadishad, as could be expected, he can't quite grasp the import of the story. He doesn't quite understand. So Narad Muni in another chapter explains point by point what is who is each personality in the story of King Puranjana. And then after hearing all this, Maharaj Prachandabhadishad, he has a revelation, a change of heart, and he gives up his attachment to karmakanda activities and his fruitive yagyas. And he also takes to devotional service. So this is the mercy of the pure devotees. Here Lord Shiva is showing his mercy to the Prachetas, causeless mercy. Narad Muni takes compassion upon the condition of Maharaj Prachandabhadishad and he delivers him through his instructions. So Maharaj Prachandabhadishad, he immediately renounces the kingdom. He doesn't even wait for the Prachetas to return home. Quite extraordinary. He immediately said, oh, I'm too much engrossed in all these activities. I have to concentrate on the Lord now. So he tells his ministers, gives them the instructions, when my sons come back, tell them what to do. Specifically, they should rule the kingdom according to the system of Varnashram, make sure all the citizens are engaged according to their natures, the proper Varnas, proper Ashrams. But he just leaves, abandons the kingdom. And he follows, in one sense, he follows his son's example, goes to the forest and meditates upon the Lord. Actually, he goes to Kapilashram. Kapilashram is at Ganga Sagar. Every year in January, there's a big festival in Ganga Sagar. It's where the Ganga meets the Bay of Bengal. And that's where Lord Kapila Dev, he had his ashram also. And many devotees from Mayapur actually go there and they do prasadam distribution, harinam distribution. It's like a Bengali Kumbh Mela, kind of. So Maharaj Prachandabhadishad also went there to perform austerities and to end his life in that way, thinking of the Lord. So in the meantime, the Prachetas are still doing their austerities. And when they finally, after having darshan of Lord Vishnu, and when they finally emerge from the water, they say that because there's been no king for a long time, there's some disorder on the earth. And they say that the entire planet has been overrun by trees. The trees have taken over. I think sometimes there's some science fiction theories that the plants are going to take over the whole world, and people are going to be, like, you know, hunted down by the, you know, by the trees and all. So, but actually, this is what happened in the Satyuga period. Because there was no proper king, the trees started taking over the world. There wasn't enough land for agriculture, so the people were suffering. So Prajadas, when they came out and they saw the situation, they were very upset. So by their mystic potency, they created fire and air, and they started burning all the trees on the surface of the earth. So it's going on for a little while, and what Brahma understood what's happening, so he immediately came there to rectify the situation. Lord Brahma is in charge of the balance of the universe. So whenever there's some serious universal imbalance, Lord Brahma comes to change, you know, to check and rectify things. Just like when Dhruva Maharaj or Hiranyakashipu were performing austerities which affected the entire universe, then Brahma had to personally come to adjust the situation. So the Brahma appears before the Prajadas and he halts their burning activities. And he also gives them some instruction. He also arranges their marriage. They marry Marisha, who is the daughter of an Apsara. We know many times in the Shastras there are the instances where the Apsaras, they go to seduce a sage, and sometimes there's some child is produced, Shakuntala, in this case Marisha. And the Apsaras are not really interested in child raising. They're busy in the heavenly planets, you know, dancing and singing and making merry. So she just abandons the child in the forest. And the trees, the deity of the trees, they take care of the baby, and the baby is crying. So Chandradev, he's the overlord deity of the forests and trees. We know how the vegetables, they grow nicely if there's moonlight. So Chandradev, he takes care of the child. He puts his finger in the child's mouth, and she sucks his finger and gets some kind of somaras, something like that, and she gets nourished like that. So this girl, she grows up and she marries the Prajadas, all 10 of them. And then Prajadas, they go and back and they rule the kingdom as was their mission, original mission. So later on also Prajadas, after ruling the kingdom and having a competent son who can take over, this is the Vedic system, the kings always rule until they're, you know, middle age. When they start to get elderly, panchasortvam vanam vrijet, supposed to renounce the active stage of life, the busy stage of life, when one is engaged in family activities, household activities, business activities, or ruling the kingdom. By that time, the son is old enough to take over. So Prajadas also retire from the ruling the kingdom. And once again, you see their unity, all 10 of them. Pretty much it seems throughout their whole lives, they're always together, always doing the same thing. No disharmony. So, actually Daksha does appear in this story, because Daksha appears, he's reincarnated as the Prajadas' son when he was previously killed by Lord Shiva, and he was brought back to life. I think he was embarrassed with his goat head, so he gave up that body also, and he took birth as the Prajadas' son. And later on, the Prajadas again renounce the kingdom, and they go back to the forest. This is actually the Vedic system. In the Brahmachari stage, one goes to study in the ashram of the Guru, and he's trained in tapasya, austerity, living in a forest environment, performing austerities, living very simply. Then he may enter Grihastha ashram, be involved in family life. And then again, the Vanaprastha ashram comes slowly. There are different stages of Vanaprastha ashram up to complete sannyas renunciation. Again, they go back to their Brahmachari training. They were trained to live in the forest, they go back to the forest and perform austerities, worshipping the Lord. So it's not something foreign or difficult, because they've already done it in their youth. They've already lived in the forest and performed austerities, so they again go back to that condition. So at that time, this time Narad Muni, he comes to the Prajadas. So they've already, in their first period of tapasya, they've had the association of Lord Shiva, they've had direct darshan of Lord Vishnu, and had, you know, interaction with the Lord. And then after their period of ruling the kingdom and Grihastha ashram, they go back to the forest and they meet Narad Muni. And they present themselves as very fallen. They say, oh, we've been so busy in all this household kingdom activities that we almost forgot the instructions of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. They say, we almost forgot. So Narad Muni, please you remind us, you instruct us. Now you can see their humility. They've already had darshan of the Lord. You know, there's nothing higher one can aspire for in this world. But they present themselves to Narad Muni as like fallen householders. We almost forgot those instructions, even though we were so fortunate. We got so entangled. So please instruct us again. So Narad Muni again, he preaches to them, gives them transcendental knowledge, transcendental instruction. And ultimately the Pujetas then, as their father has done, as all the great personalities we read about in Shastra, they spend the final part of their life meditating on the Lord and ultimately go back to Godhead. So that's a little synopsis of this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because sometimes we don't always remember the big picture when we're focusing on, you know, the daily shloka. So in this shloka, Lord Shiva is talking about invincible time and how time takes away everything from the karmis and the jnanis. So at best for a karmi, if he performs some pious activities, the most he can hope for is to go to the heavenly planets and enjoy some material sense gratification. But as we know from Bhagavad Gita, Shinya Punya Marti Lokam Vishanti, once their pious credits are exhausted, they have to again fall down into the material world. Into the middle planetary systems. They're again subject to all the sufferings. In the heavenly planets, the birth, death, old age, disease are not very apparent. Actually, they never get old. I remember many years back, Admatat Prabhu was describing what actually happens when the demigods fall from heaven. It's like an hourglass. They have a certain period of time they can enjoy, so many thousands of years, hundreds of years, whatever it is. And once that time is run out, once the sand runs out, then immediately they fall. They don't grow old and like get decrepit. They're still young and healthy. But once they fall, there's actually some kind of passageway they have to travel. And the demons, the rakshasas are waiting there to pounce on these falling demigods. And they attack them and, you know, hurt them, wound them. And out of pain and fear, the soul leaves the demigod's body through the tears. And then it comes down to the earth in the form of rain. And then they take birth, you know, as plants or whatever. Admatatrapur was explaining this once. So while they're there, they're enjoying, you know, material sense gratification, like the kind that is not available on this planet. But it's a very temporary thing. Once their time is up, they have to leave. So there's no permanent benefit. So time eats away all the benefit of the karmis. And the jnanis also, yesterday also Haishwara Prabhu quoted this shloka, Aruhya Krishnena Param Padantada, they fall again, Padanti. Padanti means they fall. Because they haven't developed their attraction for the Lord, so they again fall down. So karmis, jnanis, they don't get any permanent benefit. But Prabhupada explains here very clearly that a devotee's achievement is never lost by the influence of time. Even if a devotee cannot completely execute devotional service, in his next life he begins from the point where he left off. Such an opportunity is not given to the karmis or jnanis, whose achievements are destroyed. And Srila Prabhupada quotes Yamaraj. So after Ajamil was saved by the Vishnu Dutas, the Yamaraj Dutas were very frustrated. They had come to take away the sinful Ajamil, and they enjoy their work. They were looking forward to torturing him and punishing him. And suddenly they're stopped by these shining, brilliant personalities, the Vishnu Dutas. And there were four Vishnu Dutas and only three Yamadutas. And the Vishnu Dutas had four arms and a lot of weapons. So Yamadutas weren't able to forcibly take Ajamil. And they were outnumbered and outarmed. Four hands. If you try to fight someone with four hands, I'm sure even the very expert martial artist will have a lot of trouble. And the Vishnu Dutas had the Shankara, Chakra, Gada, Padma, everything. So Yamadutas were stopped and they were confused, you know, what is this? This has never happened to us before. And this man is so sinful, Ajamil. He married a prostitute, he kicked out his old parents, who, by dharma you're supposed to take care of your elderly parents. He rejected his wife also and took up living with the prostitute. And he started killing animals, stealing, murdering, you name it, everything he did. And he taught his sons the same thing. So he was a prime candidate for Yamaraj. So when they were refused, stopped by the Vishnudas, Yamadudas were very upset. So they came back to Yamaraj in a very disturbed condition. And they said, "My Lord, you know, are you not the supreme in this universe?" And they explained that they had been stopped by some other personalities who were stronger than them. And they considered that Yamaraj was the ultimate. They didn't know of, you know, anyone higher than Yamaraj. So Yamaraj explained to them, he preached to them that, "No, actually, just you, as you think I'm your master, I also have a master. And my master is Lord Vishnu, who all the demigods, even Lord Brahma, everyone is subordinate to. And those people who are devotees of this Lord Vishnu, you should never approach them." The Nectar of Devotion also is described that anyone who has tilak and tulsi beads, the Yamadutas will not approach. So Yamaraj told the Yamadutas, "Don't approach such people. Rather, you should bring to me those people who do never chant the holy name of the Lord, who don't bow down their heads in front of the Lord, and never perform any devotional service. Those people bring to me." And Ajamil, he chanted the name of the Lord, so he was saved. At the end of his life, he chanted the Lord's name, so he was saved from that hellish condition. So Yamaraj also, he speaks one shloka in this regard. He tells the Yamadutas that Tadeva Siddha Parigita Pavitra Gatha Yasadava Samadrisho Bhagavat Prapanna Tano Pasitata Harer Kadaya Bhikuptam Naisham Vayam Nachavaya Prabhavamatande Gadaya, Harer Gadaya, that the devotees are protected by the club of Lord Vishnu, so you cannot approach them. "My dear servants, please do not approach such devotees, for they have fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are equal to everyone, and their narrations are sung by the demigods and the inhabitants of Siddhaloka. Please do not even go near them. They are always protected by the club of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore Lord Brahma and I, and even the time factor, are not competent to chastise them." So just like this shloka is mentioning how time cannot influence the devotee, and Prabhupada quotes Yamaraj in the purport, and that shloka also mentions that time cannot influence the devotee. We know from the second canto, when Shonakarishi was speaking to Sudha Goswami, now these sages had assembled for, I think, a 1,000-year sacrifice. So when you're preparing for something that's going to take so long, you have to consider the time. But because they are devotees, then time is irrelevant when one is performing devotional service. So Sanakarishi chanted one shloka, saying that by the rising and setting of the sun, Ayur Harati Vaipum Sam Udyan Asta Jayanasa Tasyar Deyakshano Nita Uttama Shloka Vartaya. We see the sun is now rising here. So by rising of the sun and by the setting of the sun, it decreases the life of everyone. Each day passes and one day is lost. Prabhupada would sometimes say that, well, from the moment you're born, you're dying. Your time is running out. So the sun is the indication. Each day is passing. Nights are coming. One day is lost. It's gone forever. And death is coming. Time is bringing you closer towards death. But Uttama Shloka Vartaya, it doesn't affect the devotee who is engaged in talking about the Lord. Varta means words. Uttama Shloka, the Lord was praised by transcendental hymns. So the rising and setting of the sun, they don't affect such a devotee. The other day also, David Gaur Hebrew was giving class, so he quoted one anecdote when Srila Prabhupada was here in Mayapur. Jayapataka Maharaj relates this, that Prabhupada came to Mayapur, and in his room up here in the Lotus Building, which I hope you've all been to. Some devotees actually may not be aware that Prabhupada's rooms are there in the Lotus Building. Any new coming devotees should please go to the second floor of Lotus Building, visit Prabhupada's rooms. So he was sitting there, very relaxed mood, and Prabhupada took his water and he drank from very high position without touching his mouth. It is something the devotees were always astonished by. He leaned back on his bolster, said, "Ah, Mayapur, Prabhupada would love the breezes that come in through the windows of his rooms, especially when there's a storm. He would like the windows to be open and the wind to blow through the room. Generally, we always rush to close the windows and secure everything." And Prabhupada enjoyed it. So he's very relaxed, sitting on his bolster, and he said, "Living in Mayapur, dying in Mayapur is the same thing. It doesn't matter. Because once you're living here, you engage in devotional service. If you die here, you go back to Godhead and again continue your devotional service. So it doesn't make any difference. So in that sense, time doesn't affect a devotee. To that extent, one is engaged in devotional service. Avyarthakalatvam. There's one symptom of an advanced devotee of the Lord. He doesn't want to waste any time. Avyartha. Avyartha means useless or wasted. So avyartha means not wasting any moment. Avyarthakalatvam. Every moment should be engaged in devotional service of the Lord. You can see the lives of pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada, they're always busy. And Prabhupada in the later days, and sometimes he was joking that, "Now I'm just an old man, I can't eat properly, I can't sleep properly, but I'm so busy, I'm doing so many things for all the devotees. You're getting a very good, you know, getting very good returns from serving me, because I'm producing so much for you, for all the devotees." And Prabhupada would comment like that sometimes. So this principle of time is very fearful for the non-devotees. And ultimately, if one does not accept the Lord, doesn't accept the supremacy of the Lord, then he has to accept him in the form of time, if in no other way. Because death will not spare anyone, whether they accept Krishna as a person or not, or exists or not. In the form of time, in the form of death, he'll take everything away from you. So there's no escaping it, whether you admit it or not. Krishna will either he'll take you in a very scary way. Death is a very scary and unknown factor for the non-devotees. Or for a pure devotee, he simply accepts death as a passageway, transferring one's devotional service from this life and this world to the next life or the next world. So Prabhupada says how the devotee who doesn't complete his devotional service in one life, he has opportunity to continue in the next life. And the verse is there from Bhagavad Gita. Shuchinam shimatam gehe yoga prashto vijayate. So Krishna speaks this to Arjuna in response to Arjuna's doubt that what happens to someone who starts the process of devotional service but doesn't complete it? Is it that he doesn't have any status? He's not materially situated properly, neither is he spiritually fixed. So what happens to him? So Krishna responds that no, even if he doesn't complete his service in one life, he'll have opportunity to continue. And that comes by taking birth in a family of devotees. Or if one is especially more advanced, one takes birth in a family of devotees. And if one is less advanced, one may take birth in a family of a very aristocratic, pious family. In India, you see the rich people are generally also very pious. It's only recently we have the phenomena of rich people being sinful. You know, maybe they make their money from some sinful activity and they're not following Vedic culture. But traditionally, the wealthy families were also very pious, always worshipping Lord Lakshmi Narayan and very attentive to at least the rituals of the scriptures. And by that piety, they would get material prosperity. So having such an opportunity gives the soul a chance to continue his devotional service in the next life. Otherwise, it's a very risky business. Death and influence of time, old age, very, very fearful for the non-devotee. Prabhupada would tell the story of a sage who gave different blessings to different classes of people. Rajaputra Chiranjiva. So he says that the sage came into an assembly, king's assembly, and he gave different blessings to different people there. So to the king's son, he gave the blessing, Rajaputra, son of the king, Chiranjiva, may you live forever. And then he blessed the son of the sage, Muniputra, Mativa Muniputraka. Let me just look it up. And the sadhu, he said, Jivova, Maro Sadhur. And to the butcher or the hunter, he said, Majiva Ma Maraiti. It's very interesting. Verse, and the king also didn't really understand what was the purpose of this. He's blessing the prince, you live forever. He's telling the son of the sadhu, you die immediately. He's telling the brahmachari, he's saying, to brahmachari, the sadhu, you live or die, doesn't matter. And he's telling the butcher, don't lie, don't live. Don't die, don't live. So the king asked his advisors for explanation once the sadhu had left. So they explained to him, the prince, this is the son of the king. He has all the facility of the king without the responsibility. So he can perform all sorts of activities, sinful activities, whatever he wants. He has unlimited wealth, unlimited facility. Young, strong, powerful, good looking. All the qualities for enjoying the material world. And just like we see Manigriva and Alugubara, they were sons of Kubera. So they were engaged in sense enjoyment. So better the prince doesn't die, because he's doing all these sinful activities, enjoying, and once he dies, he's going to go and be punished by Yamaraj. So better he doesn't die, he should live forever. And so that makes sense. Then the Muniputra, the son of the sadhu, Brahmachari, basically means the Brahmachari living in the ashram of the guru, perform so many austerities, get up very early in the morning, you know, clean the ashram, begging in the, you know, begging house to house, collecting firewood from the jungle, even in the storms. Krishna and Sudama were stuck in the storm while they were collecting firewood. And if the guru forgets to tell you to eat, you have to fast. So many austerities are there. So better the brahmachari should just die, because he's so fixed in his sadhana and in his duties to his guru, if he passes away, he'll go back to Godhead. So better the brahmachari should just die. For the sadhu, doesn't matter. As Prabhupada said, living in Mayapur, dying in Mayapur, doesn't matter. The sadhu can live or die. He'll do the same activities. He'll be serving the Lord in any situation. So sadhu can live or die, doesn't matter. But the butcher or the hunter, his life is hellish, killing animals, flesh, blood, gore, guts. And once he dies, the punishment awaiting him is inconceivable. So he shouldn't die, he shouldn't live. That's his situation. So this shloka gives some indication of influence of how to approach death also. For the sadhu, it doesn't matter. And we see, in our line, the acharyas, how they leave their bodies very exemplary way, especially Srila Prabhupada. We've all seen the footage. He's lying on the bed and translating the 10th canto of Bhagavatam in the last days. So these examples are there, not just examples from Satya Yuga, where these great sages and great kings are meditating and giving up their lives, but even in the modern day, in our own generation, we see how devotees very cheerfully even can accept death and move on to the next realm. So it's 7:52, I think I should stop here, but one side point I wanted to share. This verse is spoken by Lord Shiva. We often hear the quotation, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. Everyone's heard that. It's quoted often even in these purports. Does anyone know where that comes from? What's the reference? Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. Sorry? Janakuru says Shiva Puran. No, this is from Bhagavatam. This is about the 7th to the last shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the last chapter of 12th canto. And we only hear the line Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu, but actually this verse is glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. The shloka is Nibnaganam Yatha Ganga Devanam Achuto Yatha Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu Purananam Idam Tatha. So Nibnaganam Yatha Ganga means, as of all the flowing rivers, there is the Ganga, the supreme river. Devanam Achuto Yatha. Of all the devatas, the supreme God is Achuta, Lord Krishna. Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. Among all the Vaishnavas, there is Lord Shiva. Purananam Idam Tatha. Similarly, among the Puranas, there is this Srimad Bhagavatam. So this verse actually glorifies Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's saying that Lord Shiva being the greatest Vaishnava is not something extraordinary. It's actually, in colloquial English you say, it's a given. It's a given. It's understood by everyone that Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. Just as it's understood that Krishna is the greatest demigod and Ganga is the greatest river, Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. That's not even the point of the verse, actually. The verse is saying, Purananam Idam Tata. Srimad Bhagavatam is similarly the ultimate supreme scripture. So I thought that was an interesting point I'd like to share, because we only generally hear that one line of that shloka. We have a few minutes left if anyone has any questions. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. You told how the demigods fall to Ne Punya. When their Punya runs out, they come to Martyaloka. Is there an opportunity for Punya or Bhakti on the heavenly planets? Because according to this verse, it sounds like when you go there, it's always a return ticket. Mm-hmm. But there's faith in Krishna. There must be some Bhakti. So how does that work?
Yeah, it's interesting because in the heavenly planets, the Lord actually lives there as Vamanadev. Upendra is a younger brother of Indra, and he actually lives with Indra in the heavenly planets. So the Lord is actually there with the demigods, but generally what happens is they're so intoxicated, absorbed in sense gratification that they don't really consider him anyone special, or they don't take advantage of his presence there. So I don't think that it's impossible that if you're living in the heavenly planets, you can't progress further. So I have a lot of opportunity for meeting also the great rishis and sages. And many times the Lord comes to protect the demigods. They have opportunity to see him, worship him. But the general atmosphere is that we want a sense gratification overwhelmingly. And generally they fall back to the, you know, to the earthly realm. So perhaps you can elaborate on that. I'm sure you know the answer.
Well, it's curious also because you see in Bhagavatam, when there's ever Leela, or not maybe every time, but often the demigods are there watching.
Right.
So it seems they're very much absorbed. So it in Krishna consciousness, it would appear maybe there's different planets, different kinds of demigods. And
yeah.
Above average.
Yeah.
More bhakti and less.
Yeah, I don't think we can rule out that they cannot make advancement,
right.
But it's generally, it doesn't seem to happen.
But Prabhupada was once asked, if you go to the spiritual world, do you fall down? Could you fall down? And he said, it's possible, just because we have independence. But whether that happens is another thing. So yeah, so the other, for the demigods, the other is possible also. They can grow up.
Yeah.
Whether that happens is another thing.
Yeah, definitely possible. Anything else? Yeah, Mataji is saying she's heard Prabhupada say that the demigods are designed to take birth on this planet in the family of devotees, especially in Kali Yuga, because the process is so simplified by Lord Chaitanya. We hear the conch, so we have to